Welcome to UXResearch.fm. Today on the show, we have Becca Hare. Becca is the VP of UX Research at Morgan Stanley. Welcome to the show, Becca.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. We love to start the show by hearing about people's career trajectories. And you've had a super, super interesting career trajectory. Foursquare, Sunrise, Microsoft, Facebook, all brands and companies everyone's known or touched at some point. I'd love to hear about how you started your career and how you transitioned and how you reach where you are today.
Sure. So my career path has been kind of all over the place, and it was completely random. When I was in school, I just have a bachelor's in communication, and I did not know what UX research was. I had never heard of user experience, never thought that I would work in technology. I always thought that if I'm studying communication, I'll just go into public relations or marketing or something like that. And so that's right. What I did. So my first job was in PR, and I think I lasted about 3 months at my first full-time job. Hated it. But one thing I really loved doing was market research. And I did a lot of that for all of our clients to try to help them understand how to position themselves from a public relations standpoint. So I had a friend that was working at a startup called Causes. I don't know if you remember way back in the day, had all of these apps, and you could use one of them called Causes to donate to charity and get your friends involved.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was very early on in Facebook's days. They needed somebody to work in product marketing. And I joined that team. It was a team of about 25 people at the time. And my very first day, I walked in and somebody asked me, oh, can you just run some usability sessions? We schedule them, but I can't make the meeting anymore. You're good at talking to people. Why don't you just go do these sessions? And, you know, it was my first day. So I thought, sure, I can do this. I don't know what I'm doing. So I did it and I loved it. I was fascinated by it. And I was really fortunate to have a wonderful manager who was really supportive of research. She understood the value that it could bring for the company. At the time, Causes was trying to build a standalone product outside of Facebook. And so it was a really crucial time for design and research at the company. And so using her network and using my network, I was in the Bay Area at the time, I just did a lot of reading and a lot of trial and error, a lot of observing other more experienced researchers. And that's kind of how my career in research took off. It was completely, completely random. And then from there, you know, after Causes, I went and joined the team at Foursquare. And my job at Foursquare is what actually brought me to New York. And I've been working here ever since. Then after Foursquare, I joined the Sunrise team. They were actually started by a couple of former Foursquare employees. And so I just literally moved to the office next door to Foursquare to work on Sunrise. And it wasn't, I was there for, I don't know, a month or so before Microsoft acquired them. So it rapidly changed into something else. And that was a really, I think, fascinating time for me in my career, because Microsoft kind of charged us with coming up with the Outlook experience for iOS and Android. They had never had a standalone app before, and they wanted to use our expertise in productivity and calendars to kind of build this experience from scratch. And so as a researcher, as the only researcher working on that, it was really, really fascinating.
It's really interesting. So sort of their first foray into making an app, big stakes for them. They couldn't screw that up.
Yeah, exactly. And then, from there, I went on to Facebook. I was there for a couple of years working on a couple of the local experiences as well as some internal products, which was great. And the reason that I ended up at Morgan Stanley, so I have I've known for a while that I wanted to go into management. And I really enjoy that type of work. I think now I've had, as I've just described, a very interesting and kind of different career. And I've had a lot of really amazing opportunities along the way. So I'm kind of at a point now where I want to share the love and really mentor people and help them grow in their own research careers. Right. And so the opportunity came up to pretty much start a research team and really help Morgan Stanley figure out how to take their research efforts to the next level and grow that team in general. So that's where I am today.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And this is really, I think it's a fascinating pattern to see companies like Morgan Stanley even forming a research team. And how did they reach out to you? How did that opportunity come about?
Yes, they did reach out to me. And it was funny because when the recruiter reached out to me, I was pretty snarky. I think a lot of us are used to, no one really truly understands what UX research is outside of being a researcher. And I think I can speak for a lot of people in the field when I say that we get really random emails from recruiters all the time who are like, oh, I have this product design position, or I have this totally unrelated position you might be interested in. And so when I saw Morgan Stanley, I thought, oh my God, I don't work in finance. This is so not relevant. And I was really snarky with the recruiter, I regret to say. And he was really patient with me. And he was like, you know, actually, it is a research position. I think I was at the point where after many years working in consumer technology, working in finance was really fascinating to me. And I know nothing about it. And I really loved the stage. They're at a really, I don't mean this in a negative way, they're at a very immature stage for design. And that's a really cool place to be because you have a lot of opportunity to shape how the UX and research team grows, but also how the company interacts and uses us. So yeah, they reached out to me, and that is kind of how I found out about the opportunity. It definitely was not something I think I would have sought out on my own. So I am very grateful that I went through the process.
Yeah, it's quite unconventional, but I guess for the research community, it's really interesting seeing, you know, seasoned researchers going to companies like Morgan Stanley, because it can only mean good things for their customer base, I guess.
Yes. Well, I think that companies outside, for a while, research was really only valued within Silicon Valley. And I think that as the field grows, other industries, especially ones that you wouldn't really consider super innovative, like finance, are recognizing the value. And it's a slow process. It is not, I mean, nothing in finance happens quickly. It's a very regulated industry. but you're definitely seeing more and more industries that are trying to apply UX research in a variety of different ways.
Okay. And being a traditional finance company, do they already have traditional market researchers, you know, like consumer insights, CMI, consumer marketing insights people? And does that team exist? Do they interact with you at all?
It does exist. There's a small team that focuses on a lot of really global survey work. That's pretty much the extent of what they do. So they're doing things like global sentiment tracking, surveys with clients, reporting on industry trends, things like that. But when it comes to thinking about the user experience, when it comes to thinking about using research to affect firm strategy, that is very, very
new. Yeah. Right. And I guess, so research, UX research for them, what does it mean for them? Does it, like you said, it could affect the strategy, but what's the first touch point? Is it the consumer products that they want to research?
It really kind of runs the gamut. I mean, I think Morgan Stanley is a pretty traditional investment firm. So we do research. We talk to clients. We talk to financial advisors. And we also talk to your everyday consumers who, you know, might be a great candidate someday to become a Morgan Stanley client. But a lot of the focus is just thinking about the future and how research can help Morgan Stanley uncover the next generation and what that means for us, you know, for our business, for revenue, for how we move forward.
Right. So coming from like a really rich career with a lot of usability research, I'm guessing that there's not so much of that at Morgan Stanley.
That is actually what I'm working on the most right now, is helping the company move past that. I think when people think of research, when they don't really understand the full value it can bring, the first thing they go to is usability testing. It's the most basic thing. I don't want to say the most basic thing. It is very, it's very useful, obviously, in the right context. But if you don't really understand other methodologies or how to bring research in early, usability testing is kind of what you run with. And that's, I think, what we saw here. And so what I'm trying to do now is help expand that to help bring a little bit of rigor to the research team, and also help the company understand, here are a variety of other methodologies and ways of working. And here's not only how it will help strategy, but how it will help save you money, and how basically to help transition the team from being, you know, like, oh, you're just one person with an opinion. So you can either go ahead and build based on that opinion and then, you know, spend millions of dollars and then maybe have to go back and do follow-up research and completely change. Or we can do the research up front, make sure we really know who we're building for, and make sure that we're not building based on, you know, one person's opinion. It takes a lot of time, but that is, I think we started stage one. It's usually just usability testing. And so right now we're at the point of, of helping people understand, how do we get to stage two, stage three, and beyond.
Right. And for people who are like not so much familiar with the more advanced methods, like beyond usability testing, like would you do ethnographies, diary studies? And I'm sure it's based on whatever is appropriate for the task at hand. But what sort of studies do you envision doing down the line?
Sure. Yeah. So definitely longer term longitudinal diary studies, ethnography, field work. And I think, you know, one-on-one interviewing could be a usability study, it could be an in-depth interview, it could be field work. But I think just getting past the A, can you use this? And B, which thing do you like better? I mean, as a researcher, it makes me cringe to even say that, you know, like, here, we're going to show you two different designs. You know, we obviously know why that doesn't really work. So yeah, it's really just helping teams understand the research question that they have, really helping them drill down into what exactly they want to learn and why, and then helping them understand all of the different methodologies that we have in our toolkit. And usually, so far, they've been really exciting. And we just finished doing our first diary study here, and it kind of blew people's minds a little bit. We're like, wait, you can observe people over time, you know? So yeah, it's all about baby steps, but there's a variety of different methodologies. And like you said, it just depends on the team and their timeline and what they want to know and how much budget they have. There's a lot of factors that go into deciding how to do the research.
Right. And that's really interesting, you know, people who generally wouldn't do research and wouldn't understand the power of it, like sort of showing it to them for the first time, how effective it can be at informing their strategy. And so given that, so you said you were the first person on the UX research team. So have you also been tasked with sort of hiring aggressively? And or
do you have recruiters help with that? So yeah, so I actually am not the first person on the research team. They've had three people on their team before. Now we have two. So I'm here to build out the team. The people who are on the team don't have a formal training in research. And so I think they were really craving like I said, some rigor, some learning about new methodologies, but also learning how to scale the research team, learning how to take the team beyond usability and really develop those relationships cross-functionally. So that's why I'm here. And I'm also here to aggressively hire and build out the team. So I am actually hiring right now. We're about to launch our job description and really kick off our recruiting effort for the year. But yes, that is part of what I'm doing.
All right, that's great. Well, if you're listening and you're on the East Coast, then Morgantown
Research Team. Yeah, and you can always reach out. I know it's, I think the thing that I get a lot from people is Morgan Stanley. What? And so I love chatting with people and helping them understand, you know, the exciting work that we're doing here and why I think it's a really wonderful place if you are kind of more, I think, on the budding end of your research career. If you are more junior, mid-level, and you're wanting to really grow your research skills, I think that this is a really great industry to do that in.
Right. And that's really interesting. And then going back to, for example, you spoke about diary studies and stuff like that. Now, there's two approaches. One of them is to outsource to companies like DScout and others, and there's so many. And the other one is doing sort of everything in-house. So given that your team is still only a few people, do you prefer doing a lot of this in-house, or do you ever contract any of the work out?
I do a little bit of both, and I think I always have. And I think the thing that is different with every company is how quickly do they move and how much money do they have? So, for example, when you're working at a company that has established research practices like a Facebook or a Microsoft, budget is never a problem. So if a team comes to me and they want to do, for example, a diary study and I have 5 other projects going on, but I still think theirs is a high priority, I can outsource that. And I have worked with DScout before. I have worked with a variety of wonderful vendors. However, I think the challenge when you're working at a company where research is very new is that the budget is not always there. And companies are all different in how they handle budget. Some teams, the researchers are embedded in the product team, and some teams it operates more like a consultancy model where you have a kind of a pod of designers and researchers who work across a variety of different teams and products. And at Morgan Stanley, what we have right now is more of that consultancy model. And so when a team comes to us and wants to engage with research, the budget for that comes from their team. So it depends on, you know, how much money they have and what their timeline is. So we've absolutely outsourced things to vendors. When we did this diary study, we ran it in-house. And that was great. So it really just depends on a lot of different factors, but I've definitely done both.
All right. And then there's a lot of talk about research repositories. So I'd love to understand, where does your research live within the organization, or do you ever feel the need for a central place to keep it, or is it
more on a per project basis? We have a research repository that we've built. We have an internal intranet, basically, and so we have a UX research section, and we have a calendar of upcoming research as well as links to reports. We always ask the teams that we're working with, because every team has very different needs. Right. So you could do amazing research. You could put together a beautiful report with visuals and icons and participant quotes and everything, and the team may never open it. So I think it's really important for us from the get-go to understand the timeline and what deliverable the team is expecting. I've had teams here that move so fast that they're like, can you please just send us an email with all of the main takeaways and what your recommendations are. And then there's teams that want the full shebang. So it depends on the team, but we always want to document it. So even if it is just an email, we still will put it inside a document and we'll still upload it to the internal tool. I think the challenge with a lot of internal tools, and honestly, I have never seen any company get this right. So it's a really big opportunity. If you're listening and you want to solve a UX research problem, building a tool for research to live in and be searchable. So you can have this amazing repository of research. If it's not searchable, it's pretty much useless unless you're the researcher and you know where to find it and you resurface that link to teams over and over and over again, which, you know, is also part of our job as researchers, is to help keep the research alive. So it is a big challenge. No one has solved it well yet, but we do definitely have a repository. And I do think it is important. Like I said, it's never just one and done. It's never just, here's the research, okay, we're going to move on. You really have to tell people things 3 or 4 or 5 times before they actually internalize it. And having a repository that you can continue to point people back to is really crucial for that.
Right. And the more people I speak to, it seems everyone's taking their own stab at an internal repository. We work at Atlassian you're right. I don't think anyone's quite managed to solve it. Another thing I hear from people is that even when we do build a really nice searchable repository, eventually people just stop putting stuff in there. Or then the researchers put stuff in and then no one looks at it. So there's lots of problems which plague the repository. Yeah. All right. And then what would you say, I mean, so with lead researcher positions like yours, there's tons of challenges. There's the internal political climate of the company, getting more budget for research, getting more buy-in, there's hiring, there's conduct. What would you, is there one that you can point to, which you would say is sort of the more challenging part of your job right now?
That is a really great and hard question. I think that I think that the hardest part of all of it is making sure that research has a seat at the table. And this is not something that's unique to companies like Morgan Stanley or any company that has a small research team. I struggled with this at Facebook, at Microsoft. Research is a hard field in that a lot of people pour their blood, sweat, and tears into products. They're spending late nights as an engineer, painstakingly building something from the ground up. You're a product manager and you have kind of led a team to execute on this vision. And you have a researcher, and sometimes our job is to be the bearer of bad news and to say, actually, people can't use this, or this doesn't actually meet people's needs, or, you know, we can be doing X, Y, and Z better. And it's hard. Yeah. It's really hard to hear that if you are someone on the product team who's been a part of designing and executing this thing. You kind of put your heart into it. And so even when there's a company like Facebook that has, gosh, probably over 500 researchers at this point, it's still hard to get to make sure that the team is involving research early on, that the insights are taken into account, that the research roadmap is something that the team is bought into, that there's budget for things, that it's impacting company strategy and direction. All of those things are really crucial and they each pose their own challenges. And so I think if I had to pick one, hiring is a really fun challenge for me. And I think that it's not too much of a struggle. I think there's a really huge appetite for UX research for people who want to either join the field or who it's growing rapidly. But I do think that, you know, just making sure that research has a seat at the table, that it really is about one-on-one relationships. So it's a very slow roll. It's about saying, okay, well, this person seems a little bit skeptical, or this person is a major stakeholder in this project, so I'm going to take them to coffee 4 or 5 times. I'm going to make sure that they know they need to talk to X, Y, or Z person. So it's very relational. I think research, I like to tell people that when you get into this field, 50% of your time will be spent doing research in some capacity. The other 50% is all about relationships. So that is absolutely crucial. And I think when you're doing research and you're managing a team and you're helping people grow and making sure that their needs are all met and you're thinking about hiring, it's really, really hard to focus on the other aspect of that, making sure that research is heard and has a place. So that is what I would say, I think, is my always been my biggest challenge, no matter where I've been.
Right. And that's really interesting to hear, that sort of getting in the organization and then having those one-on-ones with people continuously to, well, not to convince them of the value, but to help them see the value and sort of make the investment in research. And have there been sort of any instances which have been more gratifying than others when either you were able to, you know, sort of convince people to engage in research and then they saw good results coming out of it?
Yes. I mean, my favorite thing, most gratifying thing to see is the aha moment when the person finally gets it. So sometimes that happens when you're helping them understand how much money research has saved them, or when they're sitting in a research presentation and they're like, wait, what? I had no idea. This is so interesting. Yeah. And you can kind of see the light come on and their perceptions and their bias kind of breaks down. It's really, really gratifying to see that. So yes, I've definitely had examples of that. Yeah. I think when I was at Microsoft, I had a huge opportunity to do a lot of international research, and getting the buy-in and the budget to do that. I think I went to 8 countries while I was there over the course of like 3 months to do a lot of really ethnographic research.
Right.
And it was really hard to get the buy-in, but as the insights started coming back and we saw some really clear themes, it's hard to get clear themes when you're doing research on 3 continents. But when you're talking about human beings, especially if you're working on an email app and you're focusing on learning about communication tools and habits, there are a lot of commonalities that we human beings have as far as how we communicate and the tools that we use to do so. And so you could kind of see the light come on. And I think it's especially gratifying when you're able to have brainstorms as far as helping your stakeholders understand how to apply their research so that it's not scary. It's not like, I'm just telling you that you did everything wrong and we have to completely rethink our product direction, but that it's me empowering you with the tools that you need to take things to the next level.
Right. And that's really fascinating. And also you mentioned sometimes it comes down to showing people how much money their research saved them. So is there an instance you can think of, or like how do you like to do it? Sometimes it's hard to quantify. How do you like to attack that? Because sometimes that can be really effective, right?
Yeah. So one example I'll use, one of the companies I worked for had invested probably an entire year of a team of about 50 people's time in building something, and they did zero research before. It was all kind of based on one-off conversations that they had with the demographic that they were building for. And so they built this thing, launched it, and then engaged in research and told us to go out and figure out how people were feeling about it, how they basically just wanted a glowing progress report. And that is not at all what they got.
Right.
And so our research was, it was hard. It was hard to deliver the news that like, okay, these are the needs that this group of people have. And this product that you built addresses maybe one of those needs, but not very well. It's really hard to hear that. And the way that I framed it is, you know, let's think about you invested a year of those people's time. So let's take the average of what we might guess their salaries to be, the amount of team budget that you took to build that. And let's calculate how much money it took for you to do that. Now let's look at the recommendations that we're giving you based on the research that we did. We know that we wouldn't have had to have built X, Y, and Z because those aren't actually features or things that people need or want or can use. So we could have built these things in half the amount of time. And you can kind of get a rough, it's never exact unless you have exact numbers, but you can get a rough estimate of this is how much money you wasted. And this is how much money UX research could have helped you if you had engaged with us earlier. So
Right.
I've definitely seen examples like that. Sometimes it's just all about time, because time is money. And especially when you're on a development cycle, especially if you're working in a company that's not public and is still relying on VC money, and time is especially important. And you can kind of help people understand right. from a time perspective as well.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting approach, sort of a bottom-up sort of costing of this is how much it would cost you without, or it already costed you, and this is how much it would cost you to build the right thing. So you take the difference, and that's
yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of different approaches. For some companies, money isn't an issue. It's not going to be the thing that motivates people to change. Sometimes it's about helping them see that right. they had this really strong opinion. I used to have a product manager that I worked with who would come up with these use cases. He would literally come into work on Monday with the new use case. I was really excited about it. And when we asked, well, where is this use case coming from? Yeah. Is it coming from research? Well, I was talking to my friend or my mom over the weekend, and she was talking about this, and like, yeah, this is totally it. We should totally focus on this. And I was like, I appreciate the enthusiasm. Yeah. However, not research. That's not anything we can go off of. And so, you know, kind of helping people understand and again, break down their bias in a way, like you're helping them understand that their yeah. point of view is just one. And we really need to make sure that we have a much broader point of view in order to really build effectively.
Right. It's about recognizing your own biases. And it's really weird. Like, I never understood how, like, doing research is almost counterintuitive, or, you know, everyone would be doing it. And it's such a shame, because it can save people a lot of pain and a mm-hmm. lot of money.
You don't have to tell me. Right. I believe that strongly.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then now that you're in, sort of embedded in the financial world, do you see other companies like establishing UX research teams, other one of the big financial
yes,
giants?
I was really surprised. I took the time to have conversations with other financial firms while I was interviewing, because I think finance is really interesting. It's definitely a very different industry than one I've ever been in. And so I want to make sure if I'm going to take this plunge that I'm going to the right place. So I did have conversations mm-hmm. with other companies. I know American Express has a really big research and design team, as does JP Morgan. I'm pretty sure Goldman Sachs does, interestingly. I'm not sure how far along it is. So there's definitely right. a movement at some of these bigger firms to take a step back. I think as an industry like finance, I think technology has been very disruptive. There are a lot of apps out there yeah. that are really geared towards millennials, towards Gen Z, and it's hard, right? When you are a financial institution that has been around for decades, you're set in your ways, you have the yeah. clientele that you serve, and that's that. But you always have to be thinking about yeah. the next 10, 20, 30 years, and who is that person and their needs, especially given how quickly things have gone digital, how technology is changing things. It's going to look very different than it does today. And it's hard to get the wheels going on that. But yeah. That is, I think, why it's so interesting to be in financial services right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do see a trend towards investing in UX and research.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's nerve-wracking to see like literally a dozen fintech startups mm-hmm. launching a day, and everyone wants to, you know, claim the younger generation. So I think it's a great move. Hiring a research team is a great move. And you also spoke to me briefly about some of the mentoring work you've been doing. We'd love to hear about that if you don't mind talking about it. Like how do these people find you, and how do you sort of work with them?
Sure. So some of them are through UXPA International. There's a bunch of different groups that are catered towards research. There is a really amazing, I don't even know if it has a name, it's an email chain it's got hundreds of Bay Area based researchers and designers in it. and it's expanded. Obviously, I joined it when I worked in San Francisco, and I'm still a member. I still get all the emails. And it's a really great community of people who just provide research. People will email and say, I have this really crazy problem that's happening on my team, and I don't know how to handle it, or has anyone tried this methodology? So I meet a lot of people through that, through just people in the industry who are interested in research, and friends will say, oh, well, you should talk to Becca. She's had a really unique trajectory. I think that one of the things that makes my career and careers like it unique when it comes to UX research is the fact that I'm not coming from academia. I think when research first evolved as a discipline outside of academia, that was kind of all people had reference to. You know, like researchers were people who had spent decades studying one thing, who had maybe had their master's or their PhD. They were considered experts in something, and the methodologies were kind of honed in that setting. And so for a while, a lot of the major companies, the Facebooks, I actually had a Facebook researcher tell me early in my career, you'll never work here unless you go get your PhD. We don't hire industry researchers. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to have to really, I guess, rethink my career, because I admire people who go to graduate school, but I think it's something you should do if you're just really passionate about a specific area. I don't think you should do it necessarily just so you can move into UX research. And so I think, I would say, the breakdown that I've seen is still at big companies, not so much at startups or mid-sized companies, is about 60-75% of people have are coming from academia. But industry researchers, it's becoming more and more acceptable in the field. And I think there's value in both perspectives, right? Like, as someone coming from industry, I can teach someone in academia that, you know what, you don't have 6 months or 2 years to work on this one research question. You might have 3 or 4 weeks max. So how can we still maintain a level of rigor in the methodology and the research that we do, but also make an impact with product teams who need to move quickly? And somebody from academia can help keep me accountable to make sure that I am doing things correctly, that I am thinking about the kind of theories and the psychology behind things. So I think that there's benefit to both. And the reason why I'm saying this is because there's so many people coming into the field that they're like, well, I don't have my PhD. How am I ever going to get a job? You know, do I need to go to school? That's why I deeply care about mentoring people and helping them understand how to break into the field when they come from a really unique background. You know, one of the people I'm mentoring right now, I'm sure he won't mind me saying this. He's a marriage and family therapist, and he's been that for 20 years. And I'm like, this is really fascinating, because sometimes I feel like a therapist when I'm sitting across from somebody and I'm trying to draw insights out of them. You have to connect with people on a really human personal level sometimes. So his background is actually really perfect. It's just, how do you take those 20 years of therapy experience and translate them into real world applied research that you can then go and transition into a career in UX research?
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. It does sound like that some of those skills would translate. Also, you mentioned that email list. I'd love to be.
Yeah, I will do that. I need to really learn the name of the group. I think it's just like design-research-something, but I'll add you to the group after this for sure.
All right, great. And what sort of, as far as the East Coast, like, so I mean, there's always a lot of events in the Bay Area, but as far as the East Coast research community goes, is there a place where you guys meet up? Do you attend events, conferences, any of that stuff?
Yes, there's a lot happening here more and more. I tried to start a meetup a couple of years ago. We had one event, and then I just got too busy and was not able to maintain it. But one of the companies that I think does an incredible job with this is Envision. The Envision app, they host so many events. They had one even last week that was really great, where they bring a lot of designers and researchers together to talk about industry problems and the future of UX and things like that. There are a lot of meetups happening. I have actually found the research community in particular here in New York to be much more engaged than anything I saw in the Bay Area. I know Bay Area listeners will probably disagree with me, and it could have something to do with the fact that when I was in the Bay Area, I was still relatively young in my research career. So it could just be the product of just having been around for a while now. But yeah, no, I would never discourage somebody from moving to New York if they want to pursue a career in research, because there are so many opportunities.
All right, great. Well, yeah, that's about all the questions I have. Becca, is there anything else you'd like to share with people listening?
No, I mean, I think the only other thing I'll say is I really love chatting with people about research and nerding out on it. And I'm an open book. Like I said, I have been really fortunate to find amazing mentors who have helped propel my career. And so what I want to do is help people in the same way to the extent that I can. So feel free to reach out to me on social media. I don't use Twitter too often, but you can always tweet me or via email. However you want to get LinkedIn, however you want to get in touch with me, I'm always happy to jump on a call or grab coffee and chat research. So, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn is how I reached out to Becca. So I
believe it or not, people are still using it.
All right. Great. I know. I'm really looking forward to them improving their product. It works for now. Yes. Does the job. All right, great. Well, Becca, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.